Good morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here on Radio 720 WGN. Sean Davis behind the glass. Roger Badish up in Traffic Central. Roger, some of those lane closures and temporary stoppages are really annoying on the Jane Addams tonight, by the way.
I'm sorry, did you drive through those?
I stopped and waited. Whenever it's bridge work, that's when they got to, you know, kind of shut it down for a while.
Those are the worst.
Because you can't have a girder fall on your car.
No, that would not be a good thing to have happen.
No, that generally works out badly.
No,
so.
You'd probably end up on viral video, like that car that had the tree stuck in the front grill.
I love that.
He just drove for 40 miles with a girder on his roof.
Now, I thought it was, that would be me. But,
yeah.
But it was a girl driving the car with the tree in it, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Next time I run into a tree.
Yeah.
You're there. There's a tree in the front. And you're like, crap, that sucks. And then you think, well,
I could still drive this car.
Let me try to push the tree out of my car. Nope, it stuck. But it's still running. And I throw it in reverse and it still drives.
And you can see.
Well, what are you going to do? I'm not going to waste some money on a tow truck if I can still drive it. That's an extra fee.
Right.
What the hell? I'll drive it home, see if, you know, we got some firewood. Cut that thing out. Buff those scratches right out of there.
Be a little trouble getting into the garage.
Good point. But I would say, hey, you know, this time of year, especially the sun comes up at an odd time, you're driving down to work, very glary. You know, this helps out. You get some shade on your windshield.
Sure, especially when the leaves start to grow on it.
Yeah, you just got to water. Well, you get the, you know, the antifreeze coolant and stuff like
that.
Oh, yeah,
I forgot.
Water to the radiator.
Well, it's probably leaking anyway.
You add some water to the radiator, it leaks right into the roots and keeps you going. So there's that. Yeah. Stephanie Lule is a reporter for DNAinfo.com, where I also work as their media broadcast editor, and she joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Stephanie, how are you?
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm good, except you were said you. I really want to be in studio. I love doing it in studio. And then, not to put you on the spot here, Stephanie, but I'm going to. And then Stephanie texts me and goes, my boyfriend doesn't want to come out.
He's definitely done the late night WGN broadcast before, and he said, not tonight. It's been such a long day. But I'm obviously happy I can join you in some way, right?
I am so happy you can, too. But I'm going to give you another hard time for another minute first.
Okay.
And then say, you know, he wasn't even invited, so you could have just come. He didn't have to come.
No, I did. You're right. I definitely could. But he loves to he loves to listen in while it's happening. So I certainly would have loved to jump in the car and hear.
Okay. All right. I will let you off the hook then. Now, Donald Trump rally. Now, Patty Vasquez has been talking about it for quite a while here on her show tonight because her and her producer, Craig Collins, were over there today watching the goings on. And and her take on it was, this is ridiculous that he canceled it because it wasn't out of control. It wasn't out of hand. What did you see there, and what did you think about everything that went down?
Definitely inside. I'm not sure if Patty, was she inside? Was she inside tonight?
I'm not sure if she was inside.
No,
or if
they never got
outside.
Inside.
They never went inside.
Yeah, they got there a little late.
From inside, I can definitely say you obviously you had thousands of Trump supporters there. The UIC Pavilion actually holds about 10,000. I think people were estimating about 8,500 inside. And not only did you have all these Trump supporters, but you really had a sizable number of protesters that were inside. You know, the Trump campaign would say that they were being disruptive. They would say that they were getting their message across. But you definitely saw this sort of escalating tension happening inside the pavilion. You know, I was on the floor all night. We had other reporters out in the crowd, and you definitely saw this escalating tension between the two groups and eventually exploding and, you know, leading to this extremely abrupt cancellation of the Trump speech at UIC.
So when you were in there waiting for things to start, did you start getting a feeling yourself like, man, this could get out of hand here tonight?
I actually didn't even have time, you know, to kind of think that, to be honest, because we were so busy covering the little confrontations that happened between Trump supporters and Trump haters that were just happening from inside. But you know, before I knew it, I was like, oh, it's 6:30. You know, he hasn't taken the stage yet. But as you know, that kind of it happens a lot at these types of events that someone won't go on right at 6 or right when they're scheduled to. So covering everything that was happening inside, I didn't even really have time to think, hey, this might not happen. But once it did, once it was canceled, yes, it was a surprise. And obviously we all sprung into action, right? But looking back, no, I don't think it was totally totally out of, you know, hindsight is 2020. We probably could have seen this coming, you know.
Trump himself said tonight that they had like 25,000 people there and then 2,000 or 3,000 protesters. But those aren't the estimates I'm hearing anywhere else. What are our official estimates that we heard on? He said it only seats 10,000. You think there were about 8,500 in there. Were there mm-hmm. that many more people outside that the total crowd could have been over 20,000?
I would say no. I definitely think, yes, there were thousands outside. But, you know, a large majority of those people after the rally, I would, you know, I would say were protesters.
I would imagine so. And Donald yeah. Trump said that their free speech was violated. Free speech was violated tonight. And, you know, I understand that take somewhat. You know, people, we fight for the right to free speech, but protest is a form of free speech as well. Whether that shuts something down or inhibits other free speech, then it becomes a debate over what's happening there. But it's just fascinating that he says free speech was violated, but whenever there's somebody opposing him or a protester, he immediately has them thrown out. Not that anybody else wouldn't necessarily get rid of a protester because, you know, you want to do your shtick, your show, it's your place, you rented it. So you've got a right to do your thing and get rid of the people that are just going to shout over you. But it's interesting to hear Donald Trump stand up and talk about free speech and that being violated when it comes to him.
Correct. And like you said, you know, that kind of was the message from the campaign all night. This is a private event. You know, I saw a group of three students. This was something that happened earlier in the day. They were wearing Muslims Unite Against Trump T-shirts, you know, in line. They weren't saying anything, but they were promptly escorted out of line and then by Chicago police escorted across the street where the rest of the protesters were staged. So they were trying to pull out small groups of people as this was going, you know, as they were letting people into the pavilion tonight. But it seemed to be too large of a group that they could control who was, you know, who and determine who was a protester and who wasn't.
So Trump said he didn't want to see people get hurt. There's debate over to who, you know, he's saying that he worked with the police and decided to cancel this event. The police have come out and said, we didn't tell them to cancel the event. They canceled it on their own.
Conflicting reports there. Yeah.
Which is interesting. But I thought what's fascinating about this from reports earlier today and at the previous rallies this week, there was the one where somebody got punched. And the guy, I think the guy that did the punching was interviewed, and he said, next time we might have to kill him. And when Trump is asked about this, he you know, tonight him saying, I didn't want to see anybody get hurt is the first time I've really heard him say that. Maybe he has other times. But the quotes I'm hearing about are more about, which he also said tonight, there's some really bad people there, talking about the protesters, who are swinging and getting violent. And he makes it sound like, you know, my supporters are just defending themselves or the police are defending themselves. And he's never tried to say, hey, everybody's got an opinion or this or that. It's just about he sort of mildly attacks the protesters and those being bad people who are coming to these events. So I wonder who got to him to say, you know what, we better just shut this down before something bad happens.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Matt. I actually filing late from kind of, you know how these things go, like the corner while the protest was still going on. I was right near a political reporter who actually follows Trump around. He said he's been at 6 or 7 events now with Trump, and he said this by far was just, you know, out of control. And he said he could, from following Trump at all of those rallies, he says he could see the escalation, that things were getting out of control. But you know, also, I think Chicago is a bit of a different story, too, because, you know, we've seen in light of all of the recent protests we've been having in Chicago, the Black Lives Matter protests and immigration rallies, things of that sort. But also you were talking about an event on that was being staged on Chicago's most diverse campus and near the Pilsen neighborhood where, you know, many Mexican families live. Our team of neighborhood reporters could see that, you know, there was going to be considerable backlash, a considerable amount of backlash against Trump coming to Chicago. So I think, yes, there's definitely been this escalation of, you know, with violence that we've been seeing at some of these Trump rallies, but also We knew that the Chicago protesters were going to be out there in force tonight.
So there's there was an event scheduled for Donald Trump in Cincinnati on Sunday that now also, I'm seeing reports, has been canceled.
Wow.
Because of what the Trump team is saying, some problems with the facility, the Duke Energy Convention Center. Trump spokesman Eric Dieters told media outlets that the Secret Service was unable to prepare the Duke Energy Convention Center in time for the event. So
wow.
It will be very interesting to see if this rolls and if this type of thing keeps happening, does that only help Donald Trump? That's the thing, is every time there's something that seems to turn against him somehow so far, it's ended up being a positive for him. I can't think of anything that's really hurt him so far in this campaign, and there have been some crazy things.
You know, he thinks all media or all attention from the media is good attention, and I don't know if you saw this too, Matt. There's all these kind of swirling rumors that Donald Trump might be at the Southside Irish Parade this weekend. We have officials saying that's probably not the case, but no one can say for sure whether that is or is not happening, and we keep hearing that.
There was a, you know, there's millions of Twitter accounts, and you can't tell what's real, what's not. But there is a at Trump for America Twitter account that wrote, "Today the radical left declared a civil war on America. They want to kill us. Be prepared. Hashtag Trump rally."
So some powerful words, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's just some lunatic running a website or what it is, but or a Twitter account. But it is frightening. And you know, some people had written, you know, he should be able to come here and speak. And I think he should be able to come here and speak. He's running for president. And if people want to go hear what he has to say, people should have the right to hear what he has to say. People have the right to protest as well. You know, you like those things to be as organized as possible. And it's tough, though. I think I worry about the protesters trying to disrupt every single rally. I don't know what to think about it, because I do not like him. I do not like what he stands for, what he's doing out there. And I want people to be able to protest, and I want their voices to be heard. But I hate the idea of these things turning worse and worse, because I think that only emboldens the people that, you know, I think we'll see this as a call to action and like rally up. I think it's just going to make things more and more divisive. I think he should speak, get out of town, and we all move along our merry way. I think in a weird way, I'm worried that these protests getting to this level will bolster the base of who really loves him.
Yeah, his message. That's right. And you know, tonight after this announcement was made, we definitely saw some scuffles of, you know, some punches thrown from inside. But for me, being outside after, you really saw this tense scene kind of erupt, because you had Trump supporters who were all parked in a parking garage, right, just near the pavilion, and they had to exit the parking garage while protesters were trying to keep them from being able to do that. As you can imagine, Trump supporters trying to get out of a garage, people who don't agree with them trying to keep them out, Chicago police intervening, Secret Service intervening. It was definitely a tense scene, and I'll say, on the whole, Chicago police did a great job kind of controlling the chaos tonight.
See, that's a problem I have with the protesters. You can't block the people from getting out then. You know what I mean? That's not, how is that helping things? You're just inciting then what's possibly going to turn to violence. If the thing gets canceled, you won. You did it, you know, take that as a victory and head on out. Don't stand there and then block the supporters from getting out or scream and yell at the supporters. That's fueling the divisiveness. Now the protesters are acting exactly against what they're trying to fight. They're becoming what they're trying to fight by doing things like that. At least that's how I see
it. Right. And certainly the protesters, like with any group, right, they resort to all different methods, right? We saw plenty of people just celebrating after, waving signs, you know, F Trump, things of that sort, and you know, chanting that, you know, we shut down Trump, you know, just excited to get their message across tonight. And then we did see, like I described, some tenser seats. So but like any group, it's going to be a mixed bag, right?
Yeah, it's going to be more mixed than usual when it comes to Mr. Trump. Stephanie Lulay is a reporter at DNAinfo.com. You know, I spoke with Mina Bloom earlier today, and we have some audio up at DNAinfo.com, my interview with her. You should head over to the Wiener Circle now and get a Trump footlong.
Absolutely. It's actually a 3-inch
It is, yes.
Dog, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Right.
The Wiener Circle having some fun with Mr. Trump. Their Trump footlong is a 3-inch little weenie. So.
Yeah. And I should say, too, Matt, just before I jump off, you know, DNA Info Chicago had a great team working tirelessly around the clock there today. I just want to give a shout out to my fellow reporters who are on scene. Evan Moore, Kelly Bauer, Joe Ward, they, you know, all were there reporting the scenes from the site all day long. Great work. And you can find everything up at DNAinfoChicago.com.
Yeah, you guys did a great job. And as you said, it's all at DNAinfo.com. Check out the Chicago site.
Chicago.
Read it all. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone, Stephanie.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Have a great night and a great weekend. The music playing at a club Donald Trump is at right now. Steph took the night off. Getting it down. Hey. Matt Bubala here with you. Radio 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue in the Tribune Tower, right across the street from the Wrigley Building. It is a beautiful night in Chicago. Good night to get out and protest a little bit and go out and have some fun afterwards. Maybe go up to the Wiener Circle. Roger, did you hear about the Wiener?
Yeah, I heard. I saw some pictures about that, too. Getting some business.
Yeah, I did an interview for DNA Info. We have some audio up there. So the Wiener Circle, I've never been to. Sean, have you ever been up to the Wiener Circle?
I have not.
You have not. We got to get up there sometime. Because the only way I know of the Wiener Circle is from when Conan was in town. And he did a week of shows here. And he sent Triumph the Insult comic dog. I don't know if you know Triumph. He's a hand puppet dog. No. Who always has a cigar and talks like this.
Right.
And just insults people. And Jack McBrayer, who was on 30 Rock as the intern or the page, and he's like the sweetest looking, most innocent guy in the world. So these two go up there where the people working at the Wiener Circle, I think especially late at night, will just ride you, like go to Ed DeBevick's and then turn it like nasty and violent almost. And that's what you encounter. The soup Nazi serving hot dogs. And so I loved the place just from that. And so they came out with Trump footlongs this week. Since Donald Trump's in town, they decided to celebrate that and all the talk about the size of his hands and whatnot. So they have available Trump footlongs all weekend long, which are 3-inch hot dogs.
Thank you very much.
And they had some great signage on their walls there. They have this big ad in the window. The Art of the Meal. That's what it's called, because his book was The Art of the Deal.
Right.
And then they have, you know, if you don't want just the regular Trump footlong, if you're hungrier than that, you could get one of them was called the Trump Super Pack. Take off on
PAC,
the
PAC. Right.
Yeah, fundraising. Right. And there's like a quote underneath the whole thing. It says, don't worry about it. It's huge. There's no problem here. No problem at all. It was pretty good. It was pretty good. So 312-981-7200. Some people are upset about people protesting. 779 says, Trump chose the wrong place to talk. It was all college punks in the protesters. It should have been a ticket-only event. It shows a lot to the country how Chicago really is violence and trouble. But there was no... See, I disagree with that. I think this is the best Chicago's looked in a long time, probably nationally.
I think, well, first of all, you had to have a ticket of some kind to get in, a pass or something.
I don't know. I think you just had to wait in line. Wasn't it general admission? It's not like they sold tickets beforehand or got
about,
tickets, right?
No. They didn't sell. I saw stories about people printing passes off the internet or something like that. I thought that's what you needed in order to get in. You had to, like, reserve something.
But either way,
something.
You could get in.
Right.
It wasn't even full when
they canceled it. Yeah.
847 says, why protest Trump? Why cause issues? If you don't like him, don't vote for him. People continue to make our city look terrible.
Yeah, but you get into the right of free speech. I have the right to, one, peacefully assemble, and I have the right to state my opinion.
Yeah.
If I want to peacefully assemble outside where you're assembling and state my opinion, which may not be the same as yours, I have that same right.
I absolutely agree. The only place the protesters, in my mind, get into trouble is outside the event. If you're blocking people from leaving, if you're blocking their cars, then you're just causing trouble.
Well, now
that's not helping.
Right. And that's
go there, voice
the
your opinion, show up and do all that stuff. Getting inside the events, too, is only going to lead to trouble. I mean, it's fine that they're shouting him down. But, you know, if you're holding a rally and I rented this huge facility and my people are coming and a bunch of people that are against me sneak in or just go in, I'm going to ask security to remove them, no matter who I am. I mean, President Obama holds a rally and 45 people show up and start screaming at him the whole time. He's not going to sit there and just take that. Security is going to remove them. That makes sense. So you made your statement. You move on. That's fine. I worry about the protesters taking it a little too far. I don't want them to engender sympathy for who they're protesting against. I think that they have to be careful not to overstep what really is going to work best. You know, make the point, make a statement, be seen, get that message shown. I think those are all good things. And I think it's positive that people are out expressing their freedom of speech as well. I mean, you can't shut down somebody else's, but you can express your own as well. So I like that. 815 says Trump called Bernie weak when a BLM protester took over his mic for a few minutes. Interested to see how he spins this. 630 says, I do not care that they protest, but I would like to hear some of excuses used to get out of work. Well, the event was at night today, so I don't know how early they got there or not.
Well, again, if they had to stand in line, the sun was still out.
Yeah. Sean says he thinks the doors open at 3.
Okay.
773 says it was free tickets to get in the Trump rally, no assigned seats.
And that's fine. None of the rallies have been assigned seats, I don't think. So, I don't know.
312-981-7200. Brennan's called in from Rogers Park. Hey, Brennan, how are you this morning?
Hi, Matt. How are you this morning?
I'm good, man. What's going on?
Well, I'm really glad I didn't go to that rally. Just 2 weeks ago, I had rotator cuff surgery, and I'm due to have the staples taken out on Tuesday. Okay. I'm not a Trump supporter per se, but I'm not really behind Cruz. But I got to be honest with you. I really liked Rubio's answers last night. I think Rubio came to the plate. The question is it too late? Now, I'm a lifelong Chicagoan, Matt. And right now I'm currently disabled. I had rotator cuff surgery, like I said, 2 weeks ago. I've also done 3 tours in Iraq.
Okay.
Okay, I have a bent ankle I slipped on a couple weeks ago right after the surgery. So I'm not doing very well. And I'm having a hard time with every government agency, state agency. The easiest thing was calling you tonight, which I'm grateful for, and I'm glad you're on the air.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, and we thank you for your service to the country.
Well, thank you very much, but I'd like to comment here for a minute, and okay. I'd like you to bear with me. We, as I say, the 80s generation, have to make a stand now, and we have to really think who we're voting for, what we're voting for, and who we want for. I have nothing against President Obama. I voted for him both times. I celebrated in Grand Park with the rest of the world. I have nothing against President Obama. I disagree with about 3 things very quickly. I think the health care thing got rolled out way too late. I'm glad I had enough smarts to be ahead of the curve and go in person 6 months before and hear these presentations. Number 2, I do not agree with the trade deal with Iran, and I do not agree at all with Cuba. I want all those prisoners that are over there that shot cops and et cetera, brought back here post-haste. Now, Matt, you're a very logical and a very smart guy.
Well, you're getting into dangerous territory
now. Have you
noticed
Chicago lately? The youth, the African-American youth, single-handedly have shut down meetings, and I'm in Rogers Park. They did it in front of me, and they did it peacefully. Don't you understand? It is time for Carpe Per Diem. Seize the day. We need a new voice for the next generation. I am 49 years old. I am not in good health at the moment, Matt.
Right.
And I told your producer this and everything, and I really appreciate the latitude you've given me.
Sure. So, Brennan, is there a voice out there that you think we should be rallying behind, or do you think we need to find that voice?
Well, I'm really glad you asked me that, because I'm with an organization called Thresholds. And I was assigned to them by the Williams Consent Decree, which basically gave anybody that had ever spent any time in a nursing home and that had signed over a majority of their checks. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, do you know that your nursing home people only get $30 a month to live on? Could you imagine $30 a month to live on, Matt?
I can't. Brennan, you know what? I have to get some other calls, but I do want you to get your point out.
Quick,
so tell
Matt,
me who that voice is.
Matt, I just want to say this. What we need to do now is there's one person that really is taking a stand in the city. Her name is Sandra Brand, B-R-A-N-D. She works for the mental health department in Chicago. I've united with her and the president of Thresholds, and we're going to start making joint statements. And I have signed on as president liaison for all the community members, because our organization is being ignored. When Mr. Brandon Marshall was here with the Chicago Bears, he was proud to wear the green ribbon.
Yeah.
I am not disabled by choice. I suffered severe post-traumatic stress syndrome. And Matt, I really appreciate the time tonight. I'm really in a bad place lately, and I've been wanting to make a statement to seize the day, and you've given me the opportunity.
Well, Brennan, I really appreciate you calling in. Keep fighting the good fight. You've done a lot for the country, and I can hear it in your voice. I know it's a tough time right now, but stick with it. Keep getting the help you need, and keep speaking out, and we look forward to hearing from you again. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's take another call. Kurt's on the north side. Kurt, how are you this morning?
I actually went to UIC in the past.
Okay.
And at the time, I considered the initials UIC to stand for Ugly Illinois Campus, but now I think it's University of Imbecilic Communists. I really think that that those protesters, if that's what you want to call them, they're really just agitators, probably paid off by George Soros, like the BLM, the Black Lives Matter protesters. And I've never been more embarrassed of being a Chicagoan than what they did tonight.
All right, so why is that, Kurt? Why, with everything that Trump says, I mean...
What does he say? For instance, you say that, but what does he say specifically?
He says that Mexico sends us rapists and killers.
He said some of the illegals that have come in here have been murderers and rapists.
He said it in more incendiary tones than that, Kurt, and you know it.
No, I don't know it that way, because you know that that's true. A lot of them have come here, and they have raped and murdered. That they came here illegally. They should have been deported. These sanctuary cities have put the handcuffs on ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They don't hold them on detainers when they do a violation here, because the Democrats, the left wing, the left wing nuts, are pandering to the Hispanic vote, and they're allowing the criminals to stay here. No, I don't think it was inflammatory at all. I think it touched a nerve, because people are seeing that a lot of these places are being overrun by illegal immigrants, mostly from Mexico or Central America, and these neighborhoods are turning into little barrios, and they're not assimilating, and so I think it touched a nerve. They just had that illegal immigrant that went on that killing spree in Kansas City the other day. Killed four people in Kansas City, and then he killed another person in Missouri. And he was deported, I don't know, 2-3 times?
So he was deported 2 or 3 times, so mm-hmm. The system does work. They do deport people.
Yeah, but he got back in.
He got back in. And how many tunnels do they have that get back in? Nobody, I think, Kurt, would argue with you that illegal immigration is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't be handled by telling another country, we're going to build a wall. you're going to pay for it because you're sending us rapists and murderers. I'm sure that there are rapists and murderers that come in from every country where people come into the United States. I'm sure that happens. But this,
well, some of those
tell me that you're telling me that's not an incendiary tone, but you say we're forming little barrios and they're not assimilating.
They're not.
Well,
they're not assimilating.
Who says, Kurt, that people have to speak English or people have to become American in the way you see them becoming Americans?
But
that's not what this country is.
Yes,
Kurt.
It is. That is always what this country has been.
It's not. It's been a place for people to
a common language, a common culture, and a history that we all shared.
It's come together over freedom. So freedom means being who you are. Now, listen, should we have to speak certain languages, do certain things so we can all work together? Yes. Should we embrace America and support it? Yes. But you can't say this common history. It wasn't a common history. It was people from different lands that came to this country and then formed a country. It wasn't necessarily a common background that brought that together.
Is there an American history?
It is.
Is there an American history, say, like from the time that America started, which, you know, is basically after the Revolutionary War? From all that time on is a shared American history.
Okay.
You know, this isn't like, you know, everybody, like when the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence was signed, you didn't have names that, like, people that were, like, Hmong or Cambodians from all over the world. This wasn't just like a kumbaya experiment.
Okay, so we need to. So because it was a bunch of white guys
mm-hmm.
that wrote it, drafted it, we should stick more in line with that.
Well, we shouldn't demonize them. Those white guys.
Who's demonizing them?
The left wing professors. The dead white guys, the racist slaveholders. That's all they ever say about our founding fathers. That's why Trump is touching a nerve. By the way, I'm not a Trump.
Kurt, when's the last time you were in a campus classroom where you heard these guys talking about our racist forefathers? Really, you're in those classrooms all the time?
No, you hear them talk about the racist forefathers, whether they're on a talk show, usually on PBS, and. You never hear anything positive about the founding fathers. All you hear about is George Washington was a slaveholder. Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder.
Kurt, they were slaveholders.
But I
disagree that you never hear anything positive about them. Here on WGN Radio alone, we've had a Thomas Jefferson impersonator for 20 years. We've done shows with him and talked great things about him. He wrote the 35 most important words in the English language. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Yeah, and you know what that was directed at? The King of England. Because the King of England thought that he had the divine right of kings. Like the Pope thinks that he's infallible. Same thing with the kings. That's why he said all men are created equal. Thomas Jefferson also said that there's nothing more unequal than the equal treatment of unequal people.
And so we should hold to that because he owned people and people aren't really created equal. And so we should hold to that. He also, in his original draft of the Declaration, had a whole rant against slavery that other states made him take out.
Oh, yeah. Thomas Jefferson actually was going to have they wanted to remove slavery, but there was that slaughter that took place in what's present-day Haiti of the French at that time. And that's what was Thomas Jefferson's nightmare. He was afraid that the slaves were going to uprise and kill all the whites like they did on...
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
Kurt...
I swear to God.
I'm sure.
Look it up. Thomas Jefferson's
You're making
nightmare.
Up history, buddy.
What's
all right.
That?
Thank you very much for calling, Kurt. I appreciate you sharing
White
your thoughts.
Health Network, WGN.
God's sakes. What's going on around here, people? Good morning, Roger Badish. Matt Bubala here with you. We got two more calls, so this is just getting better. Bobby is in Austin, Texas. Bobby, are you really in Austin, Texas right now?
Yeah, seriously. I grew up in Chicago, but I live in Austin now.
How you doing, my friend?
Dude, that dude was insane.
No, you know what? Listen, he's not insane. Everybody's got an opinion. and we don't all agree with each other's opinions, but voices need to be heard. I'm not going to shout anybody down because this is what I don't want. Those voices are out there. We need to hear, why are people so supportive of something that the rest of us look at and say, this is insanity? And so I think it's important to hear them out and then try to figure out what the hell's going on. How are you tonight, Bobby?
Well, you know, like, I haven't lived in Chicago in almost 10 years.
Okay.
And I still see shades of my city all the time. Like, I used to live in New Orleans, and then I moved to Austin. And so I know what it's like. Like, I grew up, when I was there, I was on the south side. And then I went to, like, when you see communities band together, like, my Facebook was full of, like, well, black-on-black crime, why couldn't everybody get together like that to make it happen? You're like, but wait, you took people from all over Chicago, and 10,000 of them, different races, religions, against one common evil. And they spoke out, and they shut something down. And people were like, well, violence happens, and this was a violent protest. There were two cops hurt, and five people arrested. Last I checked, you couldn't have a Cubs-White Sox game with less things going on than that. And people make a huge deal of these things, and they try to appropriate facts and figures, and they're like, oh, well, this is going to rally Trump supporters. Fine, let it rally Trump supporters.
I do worry about that, though, Bobby. I do think that's you know what? Listen, I'm anti-Trump. I will go ahead and say I'm not going to, you know, lie about that to anybody. I don't like the way I think that, you know, Roger and I did this about 2 months ago. I think it was like 20 things, Roger. I said, that, you know, there's another candidate we're not talking about. And here's his ideas. I read about 20 things Trump has said that if you didn't know they were from Trump, you'd think, oh, that's an interesting candidate.
And I didn't know they were from Trump, and I was agreeing with most of
them. But all the rhetoric and the bullying and the BS that goes with it drowns all that out and just rallies the hate. The hate has been rallied. And I'm very happy that people stand up and express their voice and try to shout it down. But I also want our protesters to be careful not to incite more, because there's people like one of our previous callers, that's the group that's getting incited, that feels like there needs to be this uprising of the white man in America. And that saddens me and frightens me.
Matt, one of the things you said to the previous caller, the inscription on the Statue of Liberty.
Wait, say it again.
The inscription on the Statue of Liberty.
Send me you're poor, you're tired.
There you go.
Et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know what he would say? Yeah, the French put that there. I'm sorry, Bobby, I had to interrupt you there for a second. What were you saying, bud?
The greatest thing that people can do is realize that if you're going to do something, rally your thoughts with one another. You want to rub Trump's face in anything? We set the tone. Just vote how you feel, but just turn out. All of those people, all their friends, all their comrades, all their homies, whatever.
They're comrades. Way to go, Bobby.
Whatever.
Bring it that.
You want to put it, whatever way you want to put it, just show up to the polls, vote however you feel, but just show up and put, you know, like, I have discussions all the time. I moved from liberal city to liberal city to liberal city, so that's just what I know.
Yeah.
But I've lived in the South, so I deal with these conversations on a continual basis. All you have to do is just show up and let your voice be heard. You can do that in an extremely easy way. Consider the repercussions of your actions. If you want to protest, by all means, let that dude know that he sucks. That's fine.
I agree. But, you know, protest, but just be careful not to hurt your protest by making the discourse become about bad protesters or bad things that happen in protests. Don't block people's ways getting out. Don't stand there and scream in their faces. Chant, do things as a group, show unity, and show him what America really is about, but don't become what you're protesting against. That's what I worry about. The bullying, the racist remarks, all the other things that are happening on that side. Be careful of that.
Bobby,
don't make
thank
it worse.
You. Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate you checking in from Austin. We will speak with Amina Alahi from the Tribune later in the show. She was at President Obama's speech at South by Southwest today. We're late for the news, but we got to take a quick break before we get to that. Rogers next. It's Matt Bubala here with you. Radio 720 WGN, the all-inclusive Matt Bubala show. Even if I don't agree with what you say, I will defend to the death your right to say it. That's on the wall downstairs.
Sort of something like what Voltaire said, that, mm-hmm. yes, is inscribed in the walls inside the Tribune Tower here. And I think that's something we have to stick to. You know, you have mm-hmm. your right to say what you want to say. Trump has a right to speak. They canceled it. Whether or not that was truly forced by protesters or they decided not to do it, I don't necessarily think it was the wrong decision. He's got a right to speak. We've got a right to speak out against him if we want to do such things. Timothy is in Racine, Wisconsin. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I am a former Marine, disabled, service-connected, and there are many days when I feel like I don't have a country anymore.
I'm sorry, you cut out there, Tim.
We're not securing our borders. The American interests, the American people are not being protected. They go to college. They're being indoctrinated, not educated. They forgot our history. They forgot what this country stands for. Everybody has a right to come here legally. I have no problem with that. The people that were doing this protest tonight because somebody was saying something that they didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
The First Amendment is the most important of all amendments, because if you don't have freedom of speech, you know, language is the glue of any society. When you break up the language, you cause a natural barrier and division between the peoples. And then everybody wants to use the courts so they can get treated better than the next guy. That's why you can never allow speech to be stifled. Even a moron has a right to speak. And all they did was show the indoctrination that's going on in colleges. Look at, after 9/11, all the college professors that had claimed that it was our fault that these people flew planes into the building.
Tim, you are the second caller that's given me this line about the indoctrination in colleges, and I want a list of college professors that were saying it's our fault. Now, if people were saying, here are policies that have led to a disgruntled whatever, 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 we supported this group in Afghanistan against the Soviet Union, and then we left them behind, or whatever. Maybe there was talk like that. I don't know. But I don't know of a lot of college professors that are blaming America or turning kids against America in the way you guys say. Now, I've been out of school for 20 years. Maybe I'm not seeing it.
Look at Bill Ayers. Bill Ayers was part of the underground, kill people, who is an active terrorist in America, who is now a college professor as well as his wife.
Right.
And you have to think about, let's look at it this way. We don't remember the history of this country.
Okay, so now you mentioned that a minute ago. What history are you speaking of, Tim?
Let's look at all through the years, yes, the United States has been in a lot of wars.
Okay.
But there has been no country on the more to alleviate people who have been downtrodden, who have had their liberty and their freedom and their humanity stolen, no matter what their religion is.
Yeah, absolutely. Now,
we've shed more blood and had more of our blood shed to spread freedom throughout the world. And all I ever hear is how we are the problem, and we're not American because we don't want illegal people to be here.
Well,
and that's not
now,
the
Tim,
American
Tim,
way.
Where are you hearing that? Where are you hearing that? Because I don't hear that. I think anybody that's anti-Trump would agree that there needs to be better control of the borders, that people shouldn't just willy-nilly sneak in. It's the tone. It's the way that this is happening. And I don't think that the youth of America or the protesters don't realize that this country has done more for other countries than anybody else to spread freedom, that this country donates billions of dollars when there's problems around the world. We're a very giving country.
We are the most generous people on the planet. Let me ask you something. Why is it that some of these countries like Syria and so on down the line, that some of the neighboring countries who are Muslim countries who are extremely wealthy don't help their own people? They look to America, which I have no problem with, but you cannot, under the climate that we have today, You cannot allow people who don't belong here to come to this country who you don't know what their purpose or their intent is. The American people aren't being protected. Our border has been open for the last 20 years. They're driving down wages. The strain on society and the taxes are going up because a lot of them end up on the welfare system rather than in the workforce. And the ones that do aren't paying the taxes.
Well,
they send it back to Mexico.
Timothy, now hold on for a second. Hold on for a second, because I'd have to. I don't think that a lot of studies completely support what you're saying. A lot of those people come here and don't earn into ever get into Social Security, but you know, don't have Social Security numbers, but still have taxes taken out, still have money taken out. They'll never earn Social Security, things like that. A lot of them are doing jobs that pay extremely low wages that enable a part of the economy to keep to stay strong that otherwise would have trouble. A lot of this is built into by, you know, politicians kind of allow a lot of this because it supports the economy in different ways. So there's a lot of different ways to look at that. I think everybody would agree people shouldn't be climbing under tunnels, doing things that to risk their lives to get here. It should be more orderly. There should be a better system so that we have. And I agree, in today's day and age, you worry about where the next terrorists are going to come from,
well,
things like that.
But because the weaponry that can be amassed against us is far more powerful than back in the day when all we had was muskets and knives. Now you have dirty bombs, you have chemical warfare, you have biological warfare, where a very tiny amount can kill massive amounts of people, and our government sits there twiddling its thumbs. And they've known the border has been open. They haven't secured it. People have to understand, if you don't have a border that you control and you don't have a common language, which is the glue of any society that holds it together, if I can't speak to the guy next to me in an intelligible way, we are never going to bond. We are never going to become friends or brother Americans. That was the whole idea for people coming here and wanting to be American, not bringing your country here. We got the drug problem, the heroin problem. It is killing massive amounts of people. Our government has let us down. They have not done what they have promised to do. Their first and foremost job is to protect the American citizen. Period. And then, you know, we're looking at a woman who's running for president who really, by all rights, should be in prison right now. There's no doubt that she's broken the law. It's been established. And yet people are willing to vote for her because she's going to give them things that otherwise they wouldn't have, which means we have people in this country who do not put America or our interests first.
Well, Timothy, I thank you for your service. I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm going to agree to disagree with you on a lot of things that you're saying, but I appreciate the call. Thank you very much, and have a good morning. 312-981-7200 is the number. A couple of other texts. I mean, Trump is striking a chord. There's no doubt about it. 224, Trump should have done his stump. Let it riot. Let it play out. 80% of college professors are liberals, and unfortunately, they're indoctrinating our children. Indoctrinating our children. Everybody likes to think that we're indoctrinating our children. 224, if you change the subject, let's talk the ban on chewing tobacco or cigarettes. Is it about freedom or taxes or people trying to control others? Baseball players spitting or someone minding their own business will not make a kid pick up a habit. Well. Let's talk about that for a second, because, boy, won't that be a welcome relief. I disagree with that a little bit. A player chewing tobacco is idolized by young kids that go and watch those games. I imitated the swing. I'd have a mouthful of gum if somebody had a big chaw in their mouth when I was growing up. And it's this interesting twofold thing. We raise taxes high enough to help cover the costs, yet we try to drive people out of doing it. So then the taxes will go even higher to make up for the revenue that's lost by the people no longer buying tobacco or smoking. Is it about controlling others? Sometimes we do control others because it's for the good of society. You can't drive as crazy as you want because you're hurting other people. And if millions of people are getting cancer because of smoking cigarettes, that's a strain on our system as well. So I can understand, you know, should New York ban sodas because it's unhealthy? No. But smoking not only hurts Americans, it hurts people around them too, studies have shown, right? With secondhand smoke and things like that. So, boy. But the, hey, that might just be the indoctrination I got in school. I was indoctrinated to not like smoking. Also, my parents smoking like chimneys all the while I was growing up and me having to suck that in my whole life. That too was frustrating. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a deep cleansing breath. We'll be back. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. There was a little bit of audio of Mr. Trump talking about protesters. I think we have that, Sean. Go ahead.
Believe that you've done anything to create a tone where this kind of violence would be encouraged?
I hope not. I truly hope not. I will say this. We have 25, 30,000 people. You've seen it yourself. People come with tremendous passion and love for the country. And when they see protest, in some cases, you know, you're mentioning one case, which I haven't seen. I heard about it, which I don't like. But when they see what's going on in this country, they have anger that's unbelievable. They have anger.
Is he talking about the protesters or is he talking about his supporters? Yeah, who has the anger? I think there's a little anger on everybody around there. Yeah.
I'm confused again. I'm so easily. What can you? I was going to ask him to play it again because I don't know where he went with that.
Well, that was Jake Tapper asking.
No, I know, but his answer, I don't know where he went with that.
Well, I think he was saying that his people come, they have tremendous passion, and right. That's why these things tend to happen, because a protester comes and gets in their face, and they're very passionate because they're upset about the state of America.
Mm-hmm. And aren't the protesters passionate and upset about the state of America?
In Donald Trump's eyes, my guess would be he'd say, they want the status quo because it benefits them or whatever, whatever. I don't know what he'd say. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But let's listen to this.
Okay.
Donald Trump spoke with CNN's, I think it's CNN's Don Lemon, about the cancellation of the rally tonight.
Well, I got to Chicago a couple of hours ago, and we had 25,000 people scheduled for tonight. We're going to have a lot outside and inside. A tremendous gathering and of real supporters. And at the same time, we had some protesters outside, which was probably 2,000 or 3,000. And I met with law enforcement. I don't want to see anybody hurt, Don. So I met with law enforcement, and I think we made the wise decision to cancel. Now it's pretty well broken up and no major problems. And we made a decision, even though our freedom of speech is violated totally, we made a decision not to go forward. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. And you would have had some people possibly getting hurt. Or beyond. And so I made the decision in conjunction with law enforcement not to do the rally. We postponed it.
Do you think that you were, protesters have been expected tonight at your rally. Was your campaign prepared for this?
Oh, I think we were prepared, but you know, you can be prepared as you want. When you have thousands of people, you don't want to see a clash. Yeah. And there were minor skirmishes, but no major clash.
You've seen the pictures, I'm sure, of what happened inside of that rally. I'm sure you've been watching and looking at these pictures. What do you make of what you saw?
Well, I think it's a divided country. I think we have a very divided country, Don, and it's been that way for a long time, and it's very sad to see. It's divided among many different groups, and frankly, it's terrible. You look at a lot of people are upset because they haven't had a salary increase in 12 years. You know, if you look at the workers of the country, our jobs are being taken away. Our jobs are being sent to Mexico, and they're being sent to all sorts of other countries. And our factories are closing. We have a lot of problems, and we don't have a real unemployment rate of 5%. It's much probably closer to 25%.
Mr. Trump, with all due respect, people, you think that what happened?
As people give up looking for jobs, Don, all of a sudden they're considered employed statistically. And so it's a lot of
problems. Do you think that's what caused that
time,
directly
at
tonight,
the same time,
the scuffle?
Say it again?
Do you think that caused the scuffle directly tonight? Because those people who were fighting tonight weren't fighting over jobs.
Yeah. I think it's largely economic. I mean, if you look at African-American youth, they have a 59% unemployment rate, 59%. And it's, I think it's a largely economic problem.
Well, it seems like he's, it's confusing to me because, you know, he's citing what sounds like reasons why they're out there protesting.
That's not why they were protesting, well, and it wasn't all African Americans.
Well, either way, you know, but it's interesting to me that he's saying, well, we're a very divided country, and he's sad about that, but he doesn't say, I mean, you would think that if people believed in his numbers, they'd be coming to his rally loving him, because here's the guy that's going to change all that. And he sounds like these protesters are upset, Don, because of all of these things that are wrong with this country. And it's like, well, then why are they upset with you about it? They should be upset with other people. You haven't done anything to screw up the country yet. I don't know. I don't know what to make of any of it. But, you know, when he says, first of all, he says we had 25,000 people scheduled inside and outside. So it seats 10,000. So we had another 15,000 scheduled to show up outside. Donald Trump, if nothing else, he is a good promoter. And the numbers are going to be a little bit larger than maybe, you know, would actually be counted. And he says their freedom of speech was totally violated.
That's what I was getting at. Yes.
Those people exercise their freedom of speech. Yeah. Now, there does become a debate over when is one freedom of speech stifling another freedom of speech. He shouldn't have not been able to have his rally tonight. People should show up and protest and make their presence known. That's fine. But I do worry about the protesters shutting him down again. We shut him down. Well, that's not what we want. Just like we don't want him shutting other voices down and the scariness of the rhetoric of that's what he would do. I don't think people should be excited about shutting him down. They should make their protest known and
say what they got to say.
I don't think his freedom of speech was violated.
Yeah. Now, also, he says he talked with law enforcement. There's reports from the Chicago Police Department. They never discussed anything with him. It was his campaign that made that decision on their own.
He says, in conjunction with law enforcement, we decided not to do this. I don't want to see anybody get hurt.
Was that your Donald Trump?
Nah, it was weird. I don't know what that was. It was like an Elvis Trump.
Elvis Trump has left the building.
I think that would be interesting. I think we should have an Elvis Trump. I think he probably still might have made the right call. I know Patty was saying it wasn't that crazy out there, but there were a lot of protesters inside the building. I mean, you saw, if you go online at all, go to WGNradio.com, go to DNA Info, go to any on Twitter, all sorts of people have video up right now of the moment when they announce that Trump isn't coming out. And the eruption, there were a lot of protesters who made it inside.
Right. And I think that's where his problem was, because in many, if not all, of his rallies that I've seen, there have been few, if any, protesters inside. And those who have spoken out have been dealt with by his security people or whomever. And so I think he may have been taken aback by the amount of protesters who made it inside, and he didn't want that disruption to overshadow what he was talking about.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he gets protesters out of there very quickly, and if it's a number that they're not going to be able to just get rid of or get out of, then why hold the rally? Because, you know, it's not going to go his way, and he doesn't want to speak in front of a bunch of people that are shouting him down the whole time. Nobody does.
Yeah, right.
773 writes, there were 25,000 people there for Trump. Freedom of speech is fine as it goes along with what they want. Why can't we hear Trump if we want?
Well, ask Trump.
I mean, I'm not going to completely blame it on him. Oh, he didn't, you know, it was a tough venue to keep going in. His freedom of speech wasn't, you know, derailed. I don't believe he could have spoke if he wanted to, but it was that type of thing. Although there weren't 25,000 people there for him. One other 773 writes, what so many people don't understand about a venue like UIC Stadium is that while it is indeed a college facility, it is also a venue for hire. The vast majority of attendees on both sides are not college kids from UIC. They are citizens from around the city, state, and region. Tonight's debacle is being blamed on college professors for no reason. Just because it was on a college campus, don't assume it has anything to do with the so-called liberal college professor telling the kids how to think. That's nonsense. Okay. We're going to move on and give you some travel tips after the news with Rod. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. So I was in Las Vegas earlier this week, as I mentioned, for a conference. And on Thursday, we're heading back home to Chicago. It was on Wednesday. Had a 2:30 in the afternoon flight. That morning, it got delayed. We got a notice from United Airlines that let us know it's delayed till 3:23. And there was a change of aircraft. We're on a different aircraft, new seat assignments, everything else, blah, blah, blah. All worked out fine. We still headed to the airport early because there have been times before when I've had a flight delayed that they then reverted back to the original time, only like a 15 or 20 minute difference. But I'm nervous enough that it was better off. Let's just be there early. We'll wait. Board the airplane at 3:23, sit on the plane for an hour while they work out some sort of electrical issue that they can't get right. They keep thinking another 15 minutes, another 15 minutes. Finally, the pilot's like, you know what? We're going to deboard the plane. It's getting hot in here. Let's get off and let you guys go from there. And that's where I probably did not handle everything correctly because I think other people had a better deal than I did once all was said and done. Joining us on the phone right now from JohnnyJet.com is Johnny Jet himself. Hey, Johnny, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. All right, so here's what I do. So we get off the plane. And I've got work the next day that I'm worried now about. So I start making some phone calls and not paying attention. About 10, 15 minutes later, we notice a line of about 65 people to the counter by our gate. Now, our flight hasn't been canceled yet, but all these people are in line. So my business partner I'm traveling with and I look at each other like, I don't know, we better get in this line and see what the hell this is about. So we get in the line and we find out that the plane has been canceled. I get an updated note from United Airlines that we're now rebooked on a flight at 6 o'clock the next morning. It's only like 5:30 in the evening in Vegas. We're booked now on a flight 6 o'clock the next morning to Chicago. And we don't even know why we're waiting in line. We're guessing this is where they tell you where you can stay at a hotel or something along those lines. We're not even sure. And we, you know, what happens is it takes forever. We were in this line, Johnny, honestly, for an hour and a half or more. They slowly go through with people, and I come to find out they're either helping them get into a hotel or trying to find them an alternative. If you don't want to take that 6 a.m. flight the next morning, well, here's what we can do. We can send you here. We can send you there. There's a later flight to Chicago, this and that, this and that. And I did call United Airlines as we were standing there, and I talked to somebody and tried to get on the red-eye flight that night by United. He's like, well, you could do standby, but then I don't know if your luggage is going to make it, different things like that. So we end up, by the time we get to the counter, literally after the whole plane probably is rescheduled, we ended up getting on like an 8:30 flight from Vegas to L.A. on United and then laid over there for 3 hours, and they put us on an American Airlines red-eye back to Chicago. So we got back to Chicago at 7:30 in the morning. We literally spent 21 hours traveling over that day and overnight. Wow. And I was thinking, I know that this could have been handled better on my end. I'm not blaming the airline. Things happen. I don't want to fly in a plane that might have a problem. I understand that. I understand it's not easy then to figure out how to send 200 people 18 different ways when there's not another plane to just throw them on. But if you're in that situation, Johnny, I'm guessing, I was thinking, you know, as soon as I walked off that plane, I should have been standing probably by that ticket agent desk because the first people in line had the first choice of different of all the options that were available. And I'm guessing you might even say get on the phone with the airline right away to see what your options are.
Tell me
what you do in that situation.
So you have the right attitude, first of all. But what you need to do, the moment you find out that there is a delay, severe delay or cancellation, is when you need to start taking the action. So, you know, the airline's doing a good job these days. They are now sending notifications before you had to sign up for them. Some airlines you do. I don't know if you signed up for the United one or they just sent it to you.
I think in my profile, because I'm a frequent flyer, I think I have my email or my text number with them or something. I'm not sure.
So if you're not a frequent flyer, then make sure you sign up for the airline's flight notifications. But another one you can do is sign up for TripIt, T-R-I-P-I-T. And what these guys do is they usually let you know before the airline does. And even just a couple minutes earlier helps, because these days flights are going out really full. So the chances of getting an empty seat on another plane is slim pickings. So it's the people who get there first. So, you know, what I would have done the moment I heard it, while I was still on the plane, I would have called the airline, or if I had a travel agent, I would have called my travel agent and had them do the dirty work. And then when I got off the plane, I would look for a line that, you know, was much smaller, especially if you're traveling with someone. You know, have your colleague go to the customer service line while you stand in the line at the gate. Mm-hmm. But if you know it's going to be an hour and a half long, you know, it might even be worth it to go to the airline lounge. I mean, especially if you have access to the lounge, you go in there. Otherwise, you pay the $50 because there's usually the agents in there, and they can work wonders. They call them angels, a lot of them, especially the American Airlines agents. They call them AA angels.
Hmm.
But what they'll do is, you know, they'll get you on a flight. Actually, I was in Vegas yesterday, and going there a couple days ago from L.A., my flight was delayed by 2 hours, and they said, we're not sure. It was American. They said, we're not sure if it's going to go out. The moment I heard that, I made a beeline to the lounge because it was right there. And I went there, and I asked the agent if they could, you know, back me up on – protect me on another flight. So she goes, I won't cancel your flight now because we don't know if it's going to go out or not. But she said, just in case it gets canceled, I'm going to, you know, protect you on the next flight. So she put me and the people in my party on that already assigned the seats, just in case they're on hold, and they can do that.
And they're not charging you anything for that, or is that only because you have great status with the airline?
Well, I do have great status, but they do it too. You can always ask. Even I've done it with airlines that I don't have status with, and I say, you know, can you protect me on the next flight, just in case this one gets canceled? Because they said they weren't sure if it was going to cancel. Excuse me. And anyway, it turns out it did not get canceled, so we kept our original flight. But the point of the story is you got to act fast. There's not a lot of time because, again, these planes are going out almost full. And there's no seats for people to take. You know, if there's a cancellation, there's not enough seats for everybody.
Yeah. So
and
let me
ask if it's mechanical or something, the airline does owe you, you know, a hotel or money. And, you know, instead of waiting in a long line, especially if it's late at night to get a hotel voucher, an hour and a half, and then if you're traveling with kids or whatever, you know, just book yourself a hotel before they all go, by the way, and then fight the airline for it after.
And how – all right, so let's say we did that. So we're waiting in this line for an hour and a half. If we'd have just said, forget this, we're taking the 6 a.m. flight tomorrow, I don't need to go up there, we book some hotel room somewhere – and then yep. What? Then I start calling, and how good is the airline about saying, I understand you didn't want to wait in that line, that's fine? Or would they say, listen, that's a $120 room, we would have gotten a better deal, we're not paying back all of that? How would that work?
Well, that's a good question. So it all depends on the airline, the case. Again, if it's weather-related, they're not going to give you anything because it's not their problem.
Right.
But if it's mechanical, and especially if you have freaking flyer status, they will hook you up. But you know, it's a chance you take, but it's better. You know, in some cities, there's not enough hotel rooms. I mean, Vegas, they have over 100,000 rooms, so right. You don't have a problem. But if there was a major convention in town or if you're in a smaller city, you know, there's not enough rooms. So I would rather sleep in a hotel bed than on an airport floor. So even if it's going to cost me $100 out of my pocket, but you can fight the airline, and they will most likely reimburse you unless it's some crazy cost. But, you know. I mean, and if the line's not long, then wait in the line. But if it's a really ridiculous line, which I've seen late at night, wrapped around the corner, then I wouldn't do it.
All right, let me ask you this. So when we're deboarding the plane, they hadn't canceled it yet. And even after we were in line for 45 minutes or so, it was a while before they officially canceled that flight. If I had called the airline, say, on the plane and said, listen, we're deboarding, it's blah, 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 I need to get on a different flight, can you work with me? You know, they really want to, when you change flights now, charge you. What, $75?
No, they won't charge you if there's a significant delay. The moment there's a delay or there's weather, you can now get that fee waived.
Even if it's weather, even if it's not their fault, if there's a delay, if they can get you on another flight, they'll be good about it?
Oh, yeah. So, for example, you know, sometimes I'll fly like New York to Toronto, and you know, I get to the airport a couple hours early, and I want to get on that earlier flight. And they're like, oh, it's going to cost you, you know, $75 a change. I'm like, well, there's bad weather coming into town. And they look it up. They go, you're right. And then they can waive the fee. Mm. So always ask about, you know, see if there's any weather delays either where you are or where you're going, or if there's bad weather coming in there so you can beat the bad weather.
We're speaking with Johnny Jett. He helps you get wherever you're going around the country and sometimes in an upgraded situation. Let's ask him about that next. It's tougher and tougher to get the good seats, to get the seats changed without paying all sorts of fees. Can you still get an upgrade in this world? We'll ask Johnny Jett that next. JohnnyJett.com is the website. You're listening to Matt Bubala on Radio 720 WGN. On Radio 720 WGN, we're speaking with Johnny Jett from JohnnyJett.com. and we're talking about bad travel experiences. Let's talk about good travel experiences, Johnny. There are so many fewer seats these days that whenever I'm at the airport and I'm looking at that board, it'll say upgrade list, and there'll be like four pages of people trying to get upgraded on a lot of times planes that have very small sections of upgraded seats. Is it still possible for people to get upgraded when they, if they don't have some sort of incredible status?
It is. It is getting more and more difficult these days because the airlines, again, you know, they cut capacity. They don't have as many first-class seats, and everyone seems to be a frequent flyer. So you better have some high status, or you can do some of these tricks. So I recommend, first of all, number one best way to get upgraded is become a frequent flyer. And if you, and it does take time sitting, you know, in coach for, you know, at least 25,000 miles a year in a calendar year. But other than that, you know, if you spend a lot of money on credit cards, especially if you have a company, some airlines like Delta will give you elite status, you know, for spending without ever even flying them, just spending a lot of money on their credit card.
Is Delta the only one? Because I'm on United and I spend a lot through the company on the credit card, but it doesn't seem to be helping me out at all.
Well, no, I think United will only give you about 10,000 freaking flyer. They'll give you miles for every dollar you spend, but what you really want are the qualification miles.
Yeah.
So I think United and American, they'll only give you about 10,000 miles, and you have to spend, you know, around $40,000 in a calendar year. But I believe the Delta one, if you spend like $250,000 in a year, which, you know, is easy for companies to do, you can get, you know, high status. But I actually stopped flying Delta because, you know, their freaking flyer program is the worst, in my opinion. They charge way too much. And right now I fly American pretty much exclusively when I'm or their partners. But the other ways to get upgraded are, you know, the airlines, by the way, you know, they've learned they'd rather make some money than no money than giving it to a freaking flyer. So now they're offering upgrades for cheap. You know, when you check in, you might see a screen saying, hey, would you like to upgrade that seat for, you know, $150 or whatever it is, a lot cheaper than it would be to, you know, buy the business class ticket.
Yeah.
For example, one of my buddies was flying from D.C. to Amsterdam, normally business class on a lie-flat seat, is about $3,000, and they offered it for $250 at check-in. Of course you want to grab that. Or I tell people, you know, always look at business class and or premium economy or first-class fares. Don't just look at coach fares. When people are pricing it out, they're just looking at coach. Sometimes it's actually cheaper to fly first class.
Yeah, well, not cheaper than coach.
It is. I have screenshots of it. It all depends on the route. All depends on the time. Especially if you're buying last minute and the planes are full in coach, but they have seats in first class, it's actually been cheaper.
Wow.
Or sometimes it's just a little bit more expensive, but I have screenshots of it being cheaper.
But that's definitely probably not on like a cheap ticket, right? Like they've jacked up economy so much because it's full or an oversold situation. So that's why that's gone up so much more than, I mean, do they ever really come down in price for first class because they want to move those seats?
Yeah. So for example, last year, my wife and I were going to South by Southwest in Austin. And her ticket from Toronto to Austin was $680. That was business class. The coach ticket was $830. And I go, that doesn't make any sense. So, of course, I looked at that, and we bought the business class ticket. It was first class. So, you know, you save $200, and you're flying up front. But all other times I was flying British Airways, and usually their premium economy from L.A. to London is at least $1,000 more, and it was $20 more.
Wow.
They had some kind of promotion going on. Or, you know, it was full in coach, and it wasn't full in premium economy. So always look at that. Another way is you can, you know, if you're flying during peak times, like when you were flying, when your flight got canceled, mm-hmm. you could have asked, hey, I'll go on this other flight, but can you put me in first class? Or try and get bumped, and then you can try and negotiate. You know, when they oversell a flight and they're really trying to get a volunteers, you know, they're going to start offering at like $200, and they keep going up when no one volunteers.
Yeah.
Well, you can also say, hey, can you? I'll volunteer, but I want the cash voucher, and can you upgrade me? And that's happened.
That's interesting because they want you to do so much with the kiosks now. Any airport you're at, they want you to check your own bags, put the stickers on yourself. You got to do everything.
Exactly.
So every time, just about every time we go, you'll get that screen that says, your flight may be oversold. Would you accept $200 to take a later flight? You would say you wouldn't take that. You'd wait and see once you got to the desk if they're still looking and see if you can negotiate a little more.
Yeah, don't take the $200. You want to get at least $500.
Really?
So, you know, I would say no, and then when you get to go right to the gate, right when there's an agent there, say, listen, I don't mind being put on the, you know, if you need to bump me, I'll do it, but I'm not going to do it for $200. I'm going to do it for, you know, whatever your price is.
And they're pretty good about if they need somebody, they'll do that?
Oh, yeah, if they need it, they'll do it. My sister and her family each got $1,300 cash.
Each?
Because each, for four of them, they were going from Florida or New York to the Barbados during Christmas. It was actually, I think it was Christmas Day. And the flight was sold out. They oversold. And my sister, who you wouldn't believe is related to me because she did not check in for her flight. And so they took the last four people or the last 10 people, however many people they oversold, who did not check in, and they bumped them. And that was an involuntary bump. And my sister called me. She goes, can they do this? I said, well, they can, but they owe you money. And they didn't tell her that part. So I said, you go tell the agent right now that they owe you $1,300. And the agent goes and was like trying to whisper it so the other passengers couldn't hear. And sure enough, they each got checks for $1,300.
And is that
and
like
they were put on a later flight? Is that they had to wait in the airport 8 hours?
Is that a flat rate, this $1,300, or where did that number come from when you told?
Yeah, that's the government. That's the government rate that they said for. If you're delayed 4 hours or more, and I'm not sure if it's international, but that's the rate. So $1,300, I would take that any day.
I'll sit in the airport for $1,300 a person. That's another trip to Barbados.
For sure. But again, you know, this does not. If it's weather delay, they owe you nothing. It has to be mechanical or that they oversold.
Yeah, but I mean they're overselling like crazy now, right?
No, I don't know about crazy, but they, you know, the computers are pretty good, so they know when they're going to be oversold or not. But another way is, you know, to travel during off-peak times. You're not going to get upgraded when business travelers are traveling,
right?
And they're traveling usually Monday morning, and they're coming home on Thursday and Friday afternoons. So you want to try and travel either Tuesday, Wednesdays, or on Saturdays when these guys aren't traveling, and you have a much better chance of getting upgraded. It's usually when the prices are cheaper to fly. So, you know, look at off-peak times. You can also, you know, it doesn't hurt to always be nice. It makes it a lot more difficult, but just be genuinely nice to people. I used to always bring three boxes of chocolates, one for the gate agents, one for the flight attendants, and one for myself. And, you know, the gate agents, you know, before 9/11, I would fly New York, L.A. every other weekend, and I knew all the gate agents and flight attendants, and I would just bring them presents, and they would put me in first class, not even business class, first class. It was just because I was nice.
Yeah.
But then the airlines got smart, and they got the computer systems, which make it much more difficult for them to upgrade people, you know, that way. So you got to figure out, you got to now do, you got to be creative.
Well, you know, I understand that, like it's harder for them to do things like that. But if you get on a flight and there's empty seats up there, does it help to be extra special nice as you're getting on the plane, maybe hand out the chocolates to that first-class flight attendant?
Well, they can see through that.
Okay.
But again, so that's probably not going to happen. And also, you know, a lot of times, especially if it's a celebrity, they get on the last people in first class. So it's more the gate agents that you really want to butter up.
Those are the hearts you need to win.
Yes, for sure. But again, they can see right through it. You got to be genuinely nice to these guys. And also, they love it when you say, I'm happy to volunteer my seat. And then, you know, and then you can say, hey, can you get me on an upgrade on the next flight?
Yeah, yeah. Good tips. JohnnyJet.com is the website. He writes about travel all the time and will give you helpful tips to get around the world and save some money and all sorts of good stuff like that. JohnnyJet.com. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone, Johnny.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN.
Well, what did you shut him down, Sean? Is that what you just did?
You protester, what are you ruining this country? Let the man speak! Forget it, let's get funky instead. It's the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720 WGN. Sean Davis behind the glass. We've had a good time tonight and heard from varied opinions, varied voices. We've been pretty inclusive tonight, I might say. We just spoke with Johnny Jett. I had a crazy, as you heard, the craziest thing this week with this flight. And so there were some good tips there. If you missed all of that, Sean will podcast that. We'll have it up at WGNradio.com later this weekend. But as he said, if your flight get canceled, get on the phone with the airline and see if you can get some help right away. Now, this Sunday, Colleen and I are flying somewhere, and our flight is at 6 a.m.
Oh.
We picked the worst possible day of the year to have a 6 a.m. flight. Why is that, Roger?
Because we're springing ahead.
Because we're springing ahead, which means your 6 a.m. flight is now a 5 a.m. flight, which means you should be there really by 3:30, which means, well, an hour and a half before, right?
Confusing me already.
Well, if it's 6 a.m. before Spring Forest comes 5 a.m., which means you got to be there
but
at 3:30 a.m.
Is it 6 a.m.? Because we turn the clocks at 2.
We do, but I'm trying to think, in our heads,
right?
It's going to be 5 a.m. now when we have to be there because we jumped ahead an hour. Okay. So our 6 a.m. flight, when you go to bed at, say, 10 o'clock,
oh, I see what you're,
10 o'clock just became 11 o'clock, or your 6 a.m. flight just became a 5 a.m. flight, which means you got to be there in your mind at 3:30 a.m., which means you got to leave the house at 3 a.m., which means you got to get up at 2 a.m.
Which means you're not going to sleep.
This is what I'm trying to avoid desperately. Colleen's like, yeah, we're just not going to sleep. And I'm like, no, we can't be sick. You know, you can't get on a plane without sleep. It's just the worst feeling in the world.
Is it a long flight? Are you going to be able to sleep on the flight?
Possibly. It's like three and a half hours. It's not too bad. But I'd rather get a few hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Would be preferable to saying, it's just like we're college kids. We'll stay up all night. We'll get on our Spirit Airlines flight with our boombox and just blare it till we get arrested.
Yeah.
Michael Finnegan is an LA Times reporter. Now, a lot of people that called tonight expressing their thoughts on Trump were defending him and very upset about protesters and these protesters and what they're doing. And there was talk about, I think through some audio it played, but I think some of the callers who were defending Donald Trump saying he doesn't incite this, this isn't him, this is these protesters who are ruining our country, who are doing this or doing that. What is his name? Michael Finnegan from the LA. I went on to LATimes.com because you just talked about the earthquake, so I wanted to see what they had about it. And sounds like it was a shallow one, maybe not a big deal. But they have a story, a headline, Donald Trump has a history of endorsing violence against protesters. He wrote, hours before Donald Trump canceled a Chicago rally Friday amid a racially charged clash between protesters and his supporters, the New York real estate mogul taunted demonstrators whose shouting interrupted him in St. Louis. So earlier today he's in St. Louis, right, or earlier Friday. He yelled to the Missouri protesters, go home and get a job. Go home to mommy. So he does that. Here he is moaning that his freedom of speech was violated. Here he is inciting, I'm sorry, that is inciting violence to be at a rally with all your people and then protesters are there and he's whining, go home and get a job, go home to mommy. That, to me, is inciting violence. He goes on to write, for months, the frontrunner for the Republican presidential nominated has used protester disruptions as a theatrical device at his raucous rallies and sports arenas across the nation. Get him out, he shouts, as he did in St. Louis. Get him out. Come on. Let's go. Get him out. Trump, who encourages his supporters to surround and shout down protesters with chants of USA, has openly pined for, quote, the old days, when he says noisy demonstrators would be carried out of political rallies on stretchers. He sometimes urges crowds to be gentle with those getting kicked out of his rallies. He often does not. I'd like to punch him in the face, he told a Las Vegas casino rally crowd last month when one protester was ejected. So he says into the mic, I'd like to punch him in the face. A white Trump supporter did exactly that on Wednesday at a North Carolina rally, punching a black protester in the face as police led the demonstrator out of an arena in Fayetteville. John McGraw, who was arrested Thursday, could be seen in phone videos that circulated online striking the protester. He told Inside Edition, next time we see him, we might have to kill him. And Trump did not denounce, that I've seen or heard, did not go out of his way to denounce that. Now, maybe he misheard the question. like he famously did when David Duke was brought up. Maybe he just misheard about what happened. He hasn't had a chance to properly denounce that type of behavior yet. The protesters, some of them affiliated with the Black Lives Matter movement, have become more and more numerous. In St. Louis, they prevented Trump from speaking for long stretches of time. Missouri, I can't believe this, Trump said. I can't believe it. He also got impatient with the police. Where are the police? He asked. Come on, police. Get them out. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. Trump also criticized the protesters, saying they were destroying our country. These are not good people, folks, just so you understand, Trump told the Missouri crowd. I heard this was going to happen. They said, Mr. Trump, would you like to cancel? I said, absolutely not. These are not good people. But he said, as he often does, that there was an upside to getting heckled. Can I be honest with you? It adds to the flavor, he told his cheering supporters. It really does. It makes it more exciting. I mean, isn't this better than listening to a long, boring speech? So there you go, folks. The person you want, some of you, for your next president of the United States is basically running WWE as a national platform to run the country. Yeah, that's going to work out real good for us. It's the Matt Bubala Show on WGN Radio. Very exciting stuff down in Austin, Texas today. South by Southwest is going on. We all knew President Obama was going to be speaking down there because of the kerfluffle over him missing the funeral for Antonin Scalia. But Amina Alahi is a Blue Sky Innovation reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and she was down there and saw the president today. Hey, Amina, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Was it all that it was built up to be, having the president at South by Southwest?
It was a lot. I mean, for a city that's already overrun with an extra, you know, few tens of thousand people, I think having the president in the town just added another wrench into the plans of anyone who was trying to get to work today. But it was definitely an excitable day.
The first sitting president to appear at South by Southwest, was it at their request? Had they been trying to get President Obama to come there for years? How did this come together?
You know, I'm not sure if they have, you know, specifically been trying to get him, but it is a big deal that he was here. I mean, it definitely lent sort of an air of credibility to a festival that's been around for now 30 years, but has always attracted, you know, more and more big names each year, right? Like, it has almost to the point of becoming a circus, right, where it's like a different act or a different big name, and everyone's waiting to see what the lineup is going to be. So to get President Obama this year, especially as, you know, he's going to be headed out of office, I think the organizers seem really excited and honored to have him.
Tell me a little bit about South by Southwest, because I know that this used to be a pretty small thing. Did it start out as technology, or did it start out just as a music festival?
Music, and then they added sort of these other elements of film and technology, which that's what started today, and it's called the interactive section, kind of speaking to that idea of our digital and connected world. So it's really evolved over time. I believe this year there are going to be 35,000 people attending the interactive portion, and that's only half of it, and in terms of the number of days, and a third of it in terms of the programming. And so when you walk around Austin today, it is just overrun. There's so many people, so many different kinds of people. I met people from different countries, certainly different cities and states today. So it really draws an interesting and varied crowd.
So interactive runs 11th through the 15th, film 11th mm-hmm. through the 19th, music the 15th through the 20th. How much of this are you staying there for? Will you get to stay for the music at all?
I will not, unfortunately. I'm headed back on Tuesday. I've been back to normal life, but there is a ton going on. There are already lots of little concerts, parties, all sorts of special events, certainly a lot of film, like you mentioned, that's starting as well. So I think that I could easily keep busy without going to any official South by Southwest events. That's how much is built up around the official sort of conference and festival that's going on.
So South by Southwest co-founder Louis Meyer died on Friday. Was there a lot of talk about that? Was that known while the festival was going on during the day, or was that kind of behind the scenes?
You know, it was a little quiet on that front. I actually saw the news while I was waiting for the president to take the stage, and almost expected that there would be some mention of it, at least sort of, you know, in the intro or something like that, and there wasn't. Certainly there was a lot of chatter on Twitter about it, but it was almost as though people in the room hadn't realized that that had happened.
So what is, tell me a little bit about the president and what he spoke about.
Sure. Well, when he came in, it was like a rock star had showed up. I mean, the room really erupted in cheers and people were screaming, "I love you." And he really seemed to be enjoying it and expressed his sort of appreciation for Austin and some of the tacos that I guess he had here earlier today. But he was clearly here on a mission. I mean, he wants the technology community to get involved in supporting democracy and supporting civic life and engagement. And so he really came with that challenge of saying, you all are talented and skilled and you need to get involved in improving life for your fellow Americans.
Well, it's interesting time for him to be speaking at a technology festival because of everything that's going on with the Justice Department wanting Apple to hack into that iPhone from the San Bernardino shooter. Did that come up at all today?
It did come up. It was something that, based on sort of some pre-briefings and speculation, the president wasn't expected to address, but it actually came through someone who submitted a question to the Texas Tribune, which was hosting the interview. And he actually ended up speaking at length about it, and his feeling, the way that he expressed it, was that he didn't want to speak about that case in particular, but that there needs to be some sort of compromise or concession, I think is how he put it, between the need for privacy, but also the need for the government to be able to look into people with probable cause. So the examples that he gave were, you know, in the case that someone may be distributing child pornography, if there's probable cause, you would go into that person's home or, you know, look into their things with a warrant. The same maybe should be true for a smartphone. And he's saying we shouldn't prioritize that device over all other realms in which we acknowledge that it's okay to give law enforcement access. That said, he didn't go so far as to say that Apple should build a back door or should necessarily build a key, but instead he kind of said that this community should think about these things and see whether there's a way to sort of strike that balance or come up with a new system.
How was the reception to him talking like that?
I mean, it depends. In the room was very supportive of the president. They were all there to see him almost as fans. In fact, I spoke to some people who had waited in line for standby tickets, and they said, you know, this is our last chance to see him speak live as president. This is it. And so anyone in the room, it seemed for the most part, was at least receptive to what he was saying. There was no sort of verbal protest or anything like that. On Twitter, I was following along there as I was listening in the room. There were certainly people questioning the president's decision not to comment on the Apple case or to suggest that there may be a way to even enforce encryption and also give law enforcement a way in. It seemed that people were skeptical that that's even possible.
We're speaking with Amina Alahi. She is a Blue Sky Innovation reporter at the Chicago Tribune. You can read the story about her seeing the president at chicagotribune.com and follow her online at Twitter at Amina Mania, my favorite Twitter handle, at Amina Mania. When we come back, I want to ask a little bit more because Amina's around these technology people all the time, and I want to get a little more on their thoughts on this because it is an interesting conversation about, are there times that law enforcement does need to get in, and can we trust the government enough to allow that with all that we've already had with the NSA? We'll talk about that next. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. Amina Alahi is a Blue Sky Innovation reporter who gets the plum assignment of being at South by Southwest. She saw President Obama speak, the first sitting president to speak at South by Southwest, which is now 30 years old. And I guess, Amina, I imagine people would tell you it is absolutely nothing like it was 30 years ago.
So it seems. I mean, there are a lot of jokes that go around now about how South by Southwest is for brands and marketers, and you certainly see that with companies like United and McDonald's hosting pitch competitions and having their own lounges where you can go charge your phone and get a drink. So certainly a lot more sponsored than I believe it was in the past.
I would imagine, plus about 30,000 more people. Let's go back to this iPhone and the whole idea of the government. You know, President Obama was saying he kind of danced around it. You said people were a little unhappy with that, but also just saying that you're the leaders of tomorrow. You need to figure out ways that when it's necessary to catch, you know, you mentioned a child molester, things like that. And when we were talking about this a few weeks ago on the show with a lawyer who saw Apple's side in this, I was saying, so, you know, if you think about it, so if the San Bernardino shooter had information on paper at somebody else's house in a safe, you would, you know, the government would get a warrant and go get this. And if you look at it as they might have information on this device that is theirs, it's just like getting a warrant to look in your safe or look in your house. I mean, at least I could see that argument. When you're around the technology people and you talk to them and this case comes up at all, do any of them say, yes, there should be a way for government to get this access when it's absolutely necessary? Or is the fear so much in light of NSA and Edward Snowden, everything we found out of what happened in the past, that we should never allow this because it's just a slippery slope?
You know, I think there are a variety of opinions sort of all along the spectrum. But the thing to think about is, let's take the example that you just gave with a safe full of papers. If you open a safe, you're opening that one safe. But the argument in this case from the technology community is that if you create, if you give the key for encryption, you know, that would open the encryption on this iPhone, it would open it on all iPhones. So in the case that you presented, it seems clear that, you know, that person, there's probable cause, there's a reason that law enforcement would go in there. The fear is that if you use this case as a way to create that key, that it would then leave everyone vulnerable to being looked at by the government. And I do think that what you referred to earlier with the NSA, with Edward Snowden's revelations, there is a high degree of sort of skepticism and fear of what would result if government had that kind of power and access.
Well, let's talk about this a little more, because that's where it gets a little confusing. And Apple has said over and over again, listen, I have an iPhone and I don't want anybody looking at it. But Apple's made it sound like if they do this one, then everybody is susceptible, then everybody's has been hacked into in a way. And they make it sound very like, wow, if we do this one, then everybody is vulnerable. And is that completely genuine, or are they saying that once the government is able to force us to give them access, they'll be able to do that over and over and over again? And where do we draw the line? I mean, if they create this backdoor and Apple itself goes in and gives them all the files that were on the phone, it's not like they gave the government the master key to everybody's iPhone, is it?
Well, what Apple is saying is that they currently do not have access to what is on the phone. It's not that they're in possession of it and they're keeping it away from the government. It's more that they would have to create a way in. And from there, you could understand that weigh-in would be applicable to all iPhones. At least that's how Apple's putting it.
So Apple would know how to get into anybody's iPhone from then on, not that they would necessarily use it. So I think it's partially because I think the government has said, oh, you can just do it. We don't have to do it. You do it and give us the information. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't, you know, made Apple any happier about it. I guess they're saying they don't want to create it in the first place because they want their customers mm-hmm. to know that they're well protected. But also, I imagine the secondary part is once we do it for this case, then what other case is deemed, well, we need to look on this phone and we should do it. And, you know, that's where the NSA got out of control with whose calls do we really listen in on. And then we find out they're listening to ex-girlfriends and wives and husbands and everything else down the road.
Right, and that's a great point you bring up about customers, because in addition to everything else, this has been sort of a great marketing opportunity for Apple to say we stand up for our customers against any intrusion, we protect your privacy and that sort of thing. And I have heard people even today sort of questioning the authenticity of Apple's protest against the government, right? Like how much of that is driven by their real desire to protect customers, and how much of that is driven by the fact that this shows them as a champion for the people who buy their phones by the millions, right? So I think there is a little bit of that feeling of maybe they're doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, everyone seems to have sort of a slightly different opinion on it.
Well, and some people question whether or not it's really so difficult for them to look inside this phone. They make it sound like it would be impossible. We'd have to create something. It'll take a while. But then you hear a lot of people online say that's BS. They could do this pretty easily if they really wanted to. When you talk to people, what do they say about that? Do they think it's as difficult as Apple's making it sound?
That I don't know, but I do think that people feel it's in Apple's best interest to say that it's difficult, at least, whether or not it is. You know,
yeah,
they
that's true. No, it's easy. Anybody could do it. That would sound bad. You're right.
Right. That would sound bad for a number of reasons, not least of all that it would make it seem like, just like you said, like anyone could do it, and it would make us feel vulnerable.
So I'm going to, while you were away on Friday, there was a planned rally here by another presidential hopeful that actually ended up getting canceled due to security concerns. Was that said hopeful mentioned at all by President Obama?
He was not. He was not. He didn't talk at all about the race in any specific terms. He did, though, talk a lot about voting and the importance of making it easy for people to vote. And in fact, he called on the technologists who are here and any who might be watching to say, let's think of ways, let's design safe and secure and easy systems that can allow people to register and vote online. And this is something that I've covered in the past. And the reason that we don't vote online, you know, in addition to it being expensive to build something like that, is that people are concerned about voter fraud and the idea that if you're not voting, say, at a polling station or something like that, there's potential for someone to be coerced into voting a certain way. So his point was, yes, okay, those are valid concerns, but we're all smart people here. Surely we can figure out a way to increase voter participation.
Yeah, I just can't imagine us ever feeling safe enough as a society when things are getting hacked like crazy all the time, credit card numbers, whatever.
Right.
And I hadn't even thought of just the intimidation factor if people aren't actually there voting, the different things that could happen. So that is interesting. It would be very interesting to see if in our lifetimes we end up doing more voting online. I'd be surprised. So you've got a couple of days left. What are you looking forward to? What are you seeing next? What's the cool thing that's going to happen at South by Southwest for you?
Well, there's a lot. There are just tons of talks, more than you could imagine, plus all the sort of side shows as well. So my goal is to hit up some of the big talks. J.J. Abrams is speaking on Monday, so that should be kind of fun. Stuart Butterfield, who is the CEO of Slack, the messaging service, he's speaking on Tuesday. He's probably going to be the last person that I see before I leave. And then in between, there are lots of little talks. There are actually a bunch of people from shows that feature hackers or coders or things like that. So I'm planning to hit up some of those panels. The guys from Mr. Robot are speaking tomorrow, as well as from the show Silicon Valley, which is on HBO.
Yeah.
So that should just be interesting. The guys who play coders actually talking to the real thing. So it should be a funny sort of interaction, I think.
And what's the coolness level? I mean, so on Silicon Valley, they're like total dorks and
right.
trying to be really cool. And then so there's a reputation among coders and things like that. But then South by Southwest also seems like hipster land. And so what's your general vibe that you take away from South by Southwest?
So there's a wide range of people here, all ages, all sorts of, you know, like backgrounds, countries of origin, that sort of thing. But everyone here seems kind of cool, but also a lot of people are here for work, like not just enthusiasm, if that makes sense.
Sure.
They're definitely here to network. They have agendas. They're here to learn certain things. So I haven't really seen too many people who look like the kind of schlubby, messy characters that you see on Silicon Valley who look like they've been coding for a week and haven't showered in that much time. I haven't really seen any of that. I've seen a lot of, like, laid back, for sure. I mean, mostly sneakers. I don't think I've seen a single tie yet. But people who are put together, and they're here to do business.
Even President Obama was not wearing a tie today, right?
He was not. He was not. He was wearing proper shoes, though, no sneakers.
He was wearing proper shoes. Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Amina Alahi is a Blue Sky Innovation reporter. You can read her at chicagotribune.com, and we'll follow you on Twitter at Amina Mania, and you can see her updates from South by Southwest all the way through the weekend at Amina Mania on Twitter. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. America! Good way to end the show today. Matt Bubala with you here, Radio 720 WGN. It is a great country we live in, whether you think we need to make it great again or you think it's always been great but always needs some work, as it always does. I think we can all agree there's no place we'd rather be living in the world. At least I hope we can all agree on that. That's one thing I don't want to hear all the crap about. I'm moving. If you elected, I'm moving. Shut up with you're moving anywhere. You're not moving anywhere. You stay and you fight for your country. If you don't believe in what's going on, you protest against it. You work to get other people elected. You stay in your land and you do what you're supposed to do. Shut up about your moving to Canada. Although Canada is a lovely place and the people are so friendly. I will say that. President Obama taunting Justin Trudeau at the White House the other day. Really talking smack about the Blackhawks having the cup. Jeez. Couple of quick things before we get out of here. Orion's coming up with the morning show at 5 a.m. I struggled to find something positive to say about one of the other candidates, but somebody did text from the 708. Talk about Elizabeth Warren's speech Wednesday telling Republican senators that if they're freaking out about extremist candidates, to do something about it. I love her, says the 708. I've heard a lot of people say if Elizabeth Warren would have run, that would have been a candidate that they would have liked. So there's your something sort of good about another candidate. What was I going to tell you about? I had something planned, Roger, and I can't remember what it was. What was I just going to talk about?
You had so much stuff. You ran out of paper.
Come on.
Well, I can't remember. It's St. Patrick's Day Parade today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Roger. There it is. I had it here on my phone.
Oh, my gosh.
So Chicago History's Facebook page has a little photo of them dyeing the river green, has a little history of it that I wanted to read to you right now. The dyeing tradition, this is from Chicago History's Facebook page. The dyeing tradition became an annual thing more than half a century ago in 1962, but its real origins go back even further. In the early days of his administration as mayor of Chicago, Richard J. Daley was a man on a mission to develop the city's riverfront area. There was just one problem. The river itself was a sewage-filled eyesore. In order to get to the bottom of the city's pollution problem and pinpoint the exact places where waste was being discarded into the waterway and who was doing it, Daley authorized the pouring of a special green dye into the river that would allow them to see exactly where dumping was occurring. Fast forward to late 1961 when Stephen Bailey, part of the Chicago Journeyman Plumbers Local, the city's St. Patrick's Day Parade chairman, and a childhood friend of Daley's, witnessed a colleague's green-soaked coveralls following a day of pouring Daley's dye into the Chicago River. That gave Bailey an idea. If they could streak the Chicago River green, why not turn it all green? 3 months later, revelers got their first look at an ecto-cooler-colored river when the city poured 100 pounds of the chemical into the water. They got a really good look, too, as the river remained green for an entire week. Over the next several years, the same practice was repeated, and again it was carried out by the Plumbers Local. The only difference was that the amount of dye used was cut in half over the next 2 years until they finally arrived at the magic number, 25 pounds of dye equals 1 day of green water. There was just one problem. The dye that was intended to help spot pollution was an oil-based fluorescein that many environmentalists warned was actually damaging the river even more. After fierce lobbying, eco-minded heads prevailed, and in 1966, the parade organizers began using a powdered vegetable-based dye. While the exact formula for the orange powder, yes, it's orange until mixed with water, is kept top secret, in 2003, one of the parade organizers told a reporter that revealing the formula would be akin to, quote, telling where the leprechaun hides its gold. There are plenty of details that the committee lets even non-leprechauns in on. The dyeing process begins at 9:15 on the morning of the parade, which is always held on a Saturday, when six members of the local plumbers union hop aboard two boats, four of them on the larger vessel, the remaining two on a smaller boat. Larger boat heads out into the water first, with three members of the crew using flour sifters to spread the dye into the river. The smaller boat follows closely behind in order to help disperse the substance. Approximately 45 minutes later, voila, the Chicago River is green, but don't expect it to stay that way. These days, the color only sticks around for about 5 hours, which is roughly the same amount of time it takes to get a perfectly poured pint of Guinness if you venture out to an Irish pub on St. Patrick's Day. It does look very cool. It looks very cool when the river is really, you know, it's funny because you walk by the week before, you're like, wait, did they already do it? It looks a little green. But it's a really neon green when they do it. When it's really done, you can tell. You know for sure.
It's a bright emerald green.
It is a bright emerald green. Oh, yes. It's a wonderful thing.
Shudder and big honor.
We're going to talk to Orion after the next break here in just a minute, see what's coming up on the morning show. The one other thing, I didn't get a chance to talk again about this. We did a few weeks ago, and I believe there's an archived interview up at WGNradio.com with a reporter from the Daily Herald on the Longmeadow Toll Bridge, which is out in mine and Orion's area. There is the possibility there is going to be a toll road in the suburbs, in the middle of just suburbs, from a little bit west of Randall Road, cutting across through 31 and heading all the way over to Algonquin Road. They're trying to put through the Brunner Forest Preserve a toll road. It's called the Longmeadow Toll Road, and there's a lot of people against it because it's going to cut down a lot of trees. It's going to affect homes. I'm just perplexed by it because it's a toll road in the middle of neighborhoods. It's not like, you know, I'm used to, you know, my I-Pass getting deducted every time I jump onto 90 and 294 and things like that. But here out in like Algonquin and Carpentersville and in the Dundee area, a toll road. And this just drives me insane. I know I'm not against it for a lot of the same reasons other people are, because a lot of people are upset about taxes being spent or their homes or their this or that. I'm all for a lot of times more roads, and we have to improve things. Things have to happen. Things change. But the way that we just charge ourselves to drive on roads, if there's one freedom I believe we should have in America, it's free roads. We should be able to get from place to place. If you're interested, if you live out in that area, there's a referendum on the bill or on the ballot this coming Tuesday, and you can find out more. You can read the Daily Herald. They've done a lot of coverage on it. If you want just the facts, if you want to find out more about the protests against it, stoplongmeadow.com and curblongmeadow.com are two, and your local government agencies have all the pro versions as well. All right, let's check in with Orion next on 720 WGN.